and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Coming up on the show today, it's a national story, but it speaks so much to some of the challenges in the media and some of the inherent issues in the media, where you have journalists who are approaching stories already knowing what kind of story they're going to write or what kind of story they're going to do, and no amount of information could change their mind. So we'll discuss what happened to Dave Portnoy in a phone call with the Washington Post. Also, did Yakima's mayor learn anything after wrongly calling 911 to report individuals collecting signatures outside a Walmart? We'll hear in from her own words what she said at a city council meeting earlier this week that has some people upset. Also, Everett's mayor, who I have become a fan of, she has, I think, changed her tune on public safety issues, and she continues really a refreshing push to make her city more safe. And later on, wedding advice from you guys to help keep me sane on my big day. Very much looking forward to it. I will also start the show with a programming note. I will be on my honeymoon next week. We will have no live shows next week, Monday through Thursday. However, we would not dare miss an episode of Sundays with Subscribers. So our normal exclusive shows on Sunday for Sundays for Subscribers will continue. We have an awesome episode coming up this Sunday where we're going to be taking a deep dive into some of this wasted money in the homeless industrial complex. And then coming up the week after, Glenn Morgan is going to join us by popular demand from you guys. So if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, it's a really good time to do so, because you can catch those Sunday episodes while I am basking in my newly weddedness. Is that a word? Undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. Just $5 a month. All right. I want to start with a follow-up to a story we did on the show on Tuesday. We talked about an issue that I'm really passionate about, making sure that individuals are protected when they want to go out and exercise their rights to collect signatures for initiatives, for referendums. I think it's so critically important because it's one of the last ways that individuals who dissent from the prevailing narrative in Washington state can try to change things, and that's through the lawful initiative and referendum process. And the law offers a lot of protections for individuals who are collecting signatures, even some protections that allow them to be on private property, like in front of a Walmart, as some individuals were doing in Yakima on Labor Day weekend. But the mayor of Yakima, Janice DeCio, didn't seem to understand or know the law. She's a Democrat. And as we played for you on Tuesday, she wound up calling 911, describing these signature gatherers as, you know, some far fringe right wing lunatics. Here's a clip of her 911 call.
911. Hi, this is Mayor DeCio. I know that this isn't an emergency call, but I need to talk to somebody. I've emailed the chief, but there's some far right wing petitioners at Walmart, and they're not leaving after Walmart has asked them repeatedly to do so, and the police have not taken them off the premises.
We did have a call of that earlier. Who is this?
This is Mayor DeCio.
Okay.
It's the mayor. So I want to first note that the idea that that signature gatherer was there for a far right wing agenda is laughable. In fact, he was there collecting signatures for initiatives that are part of the Let's Go Washington initiative package, which we've talked about on the show many times. These are things like bring down taxes, restore reasonable police pursuits. This is really common sense stuff that I don't think you even have to be a Republican to support. So it's just a complete mischaracterization to suggest that individuals there were some fringe right-wing group. So anyway, when we covered this story on Tuesday, we told you there was going to be a Yakima City Council meeting Tuesday night, and we were told that this was going to be addressed, and it was right off the top of the meeting. That's what the mayor wanted to start with.
Before we get to the first item on the agenda, I have a statement to make in light of some misinformation that has been circulating. I'll try to be brief. On Labor Day, I was called early on Sunday morning by a constituent who informed me that, in his words, an extreme right-wing group was petitioning at Walmart and creating problems for shoppers. Who the group was is not the issue here, as I don't care and I don't know what they were petitioning about.
Yeah, but first, let me just stop her there. I'm going to play more of her statement, but I'll just remind you, Nicole, can we play just a little clip again from that 911 call?
There's some far right-wing petitioners at Walmart. I have had some constituents call me to tell me about some right-wing petitioners over at Walmart.
So I'm sorry, when the mayor says in her statement at the city council meeting that it didn't matter to her who they were or what they were there supporting, she clearly felt confident regurgitating that line and describing them in that way. If she didn't care what side of the aisle, what political party, what agenda those petitioners have, then why did she bring it up repeatedly during the call to 911? So that just does not hold water to me. Okay, let's continue with her comment at the top of the meeting. She kind of goes on to not only justify what she did, but to suggest that as the mayor, she has a right to call 911, even if it's not an emergency.
Numerous credible local people have told me since then that the petitioner's behavior was aggressive, they felt harassed, and even threatened by them. He asked if I could find out why the police wouldn't help the manager. Being a Labor Day weekend, I wasn't able to reach anyone at the non-emergent police number, and the chief didn't answer when I emailed him, although he did call me back later. So I called 911, identified myself, and told them it was not an emergency, and that I needed to talk to someone who may know what was going on. It is within my purview to call 911 when I have a question.
It's not in your purview to call 911 when you have a question, Mayor. I don't know where you think that is. It's not in anyone's purview to be able to just pick up the phone and use 911 as your personal answering service for something that you acknowledge off the top of the phone call was not an emergency that you just had some questions about. I'll also point out what I feel like is just another mistruth in the comments is that, you know, she has said that people were telling her, and one of the reasons she called is that these signature gatherers were harassing people. They were making people feel intimidated and threatened. She never mentioned that in the call to 911. That would have been a different situation. If you had a signature gatherer who was threatening or harassing or intimidating people, surely she would have mentioned that in the 911 call, but she doesn't. She just keeps repeating that they're, you know, far right wingers. So she goes on in her statement at the top of the city council meeting, and she details some of the hate that she says she has received since the 911 call was posted publicly without her phone number, which she gives to the dispatcher at the end, being redacted.
I admit I was unaware of all the nuances of the law at the time, though, and in hindsight, I could have waited to hear from the chief. But I did know that if petitioners were harassing or interfering with shoppers, the business could ask them to move. I just wasn't aware that it took a court order. I never asked the police to go to Walmart or demanded that they do anything. No one told the group that they couldn't petition. And it was certainly not my intention to stop them. I have a degree in journalism, and I'm the last person who would infringe on anyone's freedom of speech. Since this call, 911 call, was made public without my personal phone number being redacted, I've had hundreds of phone calls, texts, and voicemails from across the country. Some of them are quite juvenile and include sexual harassment. I got one this morning that I'd like to play for you.
Yes. I was just wondering how a beautiful face could be such a liberal cunt that would like to stop democracy.
This has also affected my husband, who is a disabled veteran from the Iraq War. He has PTSD, as they've been harassing him as well. So this has been conflated to new heights, as these things often do when inaccurate perspectives are reported. So this is my statement, and this is all I'm going to say about this. And so we can get on with the rest of the meeting.
So a few things. When she says this has been conflated to new heights, as things often are when inaccurate information is or perspectives are reported, it's what she did in that 911 call, you know, elevating this to a situation where someone who is lawfully gathering signatures, who is described as some, you know, extremist on 911, when the mayor calls 911 about something like that. And so I would say that she was at the forefront of turning this into something that it did not need to be. Also, that wasn't an apology. you'll notice. That wasn't any sort of form of an apology or, hey, I've learned a lesson from this. Now, you know, I mean, she did acknowledge that she wasn't fully informed about the laws around signature gathering, but there wasn't any sort of mea culpa. I also would just point out, I mean, that voicemail she shared with us, she also shared a couple social media posts, completely disgusting and awful. And no elected official deserves to be spoken to in that way, deserves to be treated in that way. And I don't understand why people who are opposed to what she did think that that's somehow going to benefit them or further their cause or their message. However, I also don't agree with using it as sort of a crutch to get out of criticism, which is too often done, particularly by politicians on the left. I've seen Seattle City Council members do this a lot, where they do something that is very worthy of criticism, and then they trot out, well, now I'm being attacked. Now I have people sending me angry messages and Twitter messages. To me, that's bad, but also I'm not going to allow you to use that as something to avoid criticism and scrutiny because you want people to feel like, okay, now she's the victim, she's being targeted, so we got to back off. I'm not going to back off. I'm also, you know, going to express my disappointment with the way that some people responded to this situation. But rather than have me deliver my final sort of thoughts on how I feel about this, I actually think a Yakima resident named Eric Torres, who went to the city council meeting on Tuesday night, summed this up in his public testimony way better than I ever could about the problem with what she did and how she addressed it. So I'm going to let Eric Torres speak for me and so many other common sense, sane individuals who have a problem with how this all went down.
Madam Mayor, I find it regrettable that you had those responses. When my wife ran for commissioner, there were some pretty vile things said and produced about her too. So I get that. However, like I said, I'm not excusing any of that. If there would have been any hint of remorse or even just saying I'm sorry about an understanding, I would have abdicated my time tonight. But I do find it kind of shameful that instead you gave yourself a pass in your actions. And I also just want to say that I heard the call, and your use of extreme right wing. What is the difference between being conservative and being extreme right wing? What does that even mean? It's, in my opinion, inflammatory language, trying to gin up a response, and trying to criminalize being somewhat conservative. And we're seeing that on the national stage all over the place. So I find it disturbing that you choose to use that kind of language when you call 911, who are our law enforcement agency, to ask a question, but you are artificially conflating the people that are there with extreme behavior, which there wasn't any extreme behavior.
Eric Torres, I could not have said it better myself. I echo those sentiments exactly. It was a very kind, thoughtful, but trying to hold his mayor accountable, wonderful piece of testimony. So that is going to be the final word on that, because I could not say anything that he did not say in that testimony. All right. The city of Burien has been dealing with a lot of drama around homeless encampments. And this just... Burien to me is, I would say, Exhibit B. Seattle's Exhibit A. We're going to call Burien Exhibit B. B for Burien. See what I did there? Of really when political posturing, grandstanding, performative politics gets in the way of any sort of effective efforts to deal with crises. You know, they had some issues with homeless encampments popping up in areas that the public should be able to enjoy. And then there's this push and pull where common sense members of the public are like, hey, you know, we have compassion for these individuals, but this is also a public place. And, you know, there are clear quality of life issues that come along with growing homeless encampments, and we're not going to be okay with this. And so, you know, the city of Burien had put forth an ordinance that would prohibit public camping. And we all know by now, I think, that there are some issues with that based on a federal court ruling where you can do that as a city. You can come up with, you know, for instance, no sit, no lie laws where people can't like lay or sit on sidewalks during certain hours of the day, but only if you can remove them, only if there are shelter options available and shelter has been offered to them. So, for instance, you can have a homeless individual sitting on a public area and you say, get out of here, but you aren't offering them an alternative. So we know that there are issues and it's okay to talk about those things. It is perfectly reasonable to talk about, okay, here we have an ordinance we want to put forth to try to ban public camping, aka, you know, homeless encampments from forming in these areas. But let's also talk about this in practice. You know, do we have the shelter availability to be able to get around the legal challenges with trying to remove encampments? So that's all fine. Like, let's have healthy conversations about the laws, about what we can and cannot do. But when it devolves into, again, performative politics and identitarianism, that is when everything falls apart. So here's the latest headline out of the city of Burien. This is from Como News. Quote, this reeks of white supremacy. Drama continues on Burien Council amid encampment woes. So there's a Burien city council member during this latest meeting named Hugo Garcia, who had to make this a conversation about race.
We're pushing folks from one place to another. And the one thing that is noticeable is that they're being pushed from higher income places to lower income places. Okay, so this reeks of white supremacy. This reeks of it. I'm speaking, please, as your council member, please let me finish. I only have 5 minutes.
Please no.
Excuse me.
Please no audience remarks while council members are speaking. No audience remarks while council is speaking. Thank you very much.
Jeepers, Burien is very shades of Seattle. I find it interesting, though, that while he's in the process of calling people who support removing homeless encampments white supremacists, and they arguably, I don't like interruptions at city council meetings, but if I'm in a meeting and somebody's calling me a white supremacist, I'm probably going to say something. And he's like, let me speak as your council member. It's like, well, as my council member, you just called me a racist. So I feel like I have a right to be able to say something about that. But I will say, good for another council member in Burien, Stephanie Mora, who I don't want to assume, but she doesn't look white. I don't know, just her picture, right? She called this what it was in a story with Como. She said, that is racist.
I would like to have council member Hugo Garcia censured on grounds of calling everyone white supremacist. That was a very racist remark.
There was no second on that motion, so it died. But Stephanie Mora, talking with me on the phone, says she's not letting it rest.
This was the first time he actually called it white supremacy, but he has in the past called something that we are trying to do as being a racist target. And it's so factually incorrect.
And again, so good for her, because it is a racist thing to do. And also, it does no good in the conversation, and it's not backed up by anything factually. It's also the soft bigotry of low expectations, where you're saying, hey, you're moving these people from a higher income area into lower income area, and I don't understand, like, are you saying that your community is completely segregated on the basis of income and that only white people are wealthy in your community? I guess I don't understand that either. But it completely derails any meaningful conversation that people want to have, because you're making it about race. And as soon as you make it about race, a lot of people back away. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, I don't want to be a white supremacist. And then that's how we get into these, you know, the depths of these crises where we never fix anything, because you have so many reasonable people who check out of the conversation because they don't want to get involved in that kind of labeling and that kind of name calling and vitriol and performative politics. And it is absolutely the reason why we're dealing with this. I also find it fascinating that in one of the most progressive areas of the country, that's where we hear these arguments the most. Like, we have, I think, by and large, a population that loves everyone regardless of the color of their skin, that respects people of different backgrounds, of different ethnicities, of different socioeconomic statuses. Unless you're rich, then they hate you. And different sexual orientations, whatever it is. Yet here, that card is pulled more often than anywhere about this is racist, this is white supremacist, this is anti-trans, whatever it is. It's like, you must have a really low opinion of Washingtonians. You must have a really low opinion of the people in your state and the people in your communities where you seem to think that they approach everything in a racist way, in a sexist way, in an anti-gay way. It's incredibly strange to me. People here are by and large, very kind, very considerate, very thoughtful. They have empathy for people living on our streets, but they reasonably don't want massive homeless encampments in public places downtown, and they want people to actually get help. This is really not a lot to ask. And it's certainly not white supremacy. Get a grip. All right, coming up next, I've got to play some of this video that David Portnoy put out of a conversation between him and a reporter at the Washington Post, because it sums up, it's really a fascinating behind-the-scenes look at the state of journalism in America. So we're going to get to that next in our segment, Unbelievable. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. In fact, I just had Wes in studio yesterday. We were chatting after the show about the state of the market, and he was talking about the Listing Boost concierge service that they offer that a lot of people take advantage of. You know, you've got a house you need to sell, it needs some work done. You're like, that is not something I want to take on. It's not something I want to pay for. Well, Wes Jones and his team can help you out with that. They did that for Susan in Federal Way when she decided to sell the home she'd been living in for 25 years.
I knew I had to paint. I knew I needed to get new flooring. I needed to get new lighting. I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. Work started immediately. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. So that sounds like something you might be interested in taking advantage of, the Listing Boost concierge service. Just visit Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Oftentimes in the national media, in local media, when a reporter sets out to do a story, the theme of that story, the end result of that story is already preordained. And I cannot think of a better illustration of that than a phone call David Portnoy, the founder of Barstool Sports, had with a quote unquote journalist from the Washington Post. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. To start the segment by pretending that David Portnoy has never said anything controversial. I frankly don't follow the guy a whole lot. I'm not a big sports fan. He's the founder of Barstool Sports, so there's a lot of his content that just isn't of interest to me. But I clearly know who he is. I know that people will often talk about how controversial he is, but whenever I hear that, I'm like, well, I don't know what they're referring to, so I'm not going to make a judgment about a human being based on what some other people say about him, because I also know what it's like to be misunderstood, to have people say things about me, and then to have that be what forms other people's opinions of me. But anyway, so one thing I do know about David Portnoy is that during the pandemic, he saved a lot of small restaurants from going under. He raised millions of dollars because he has this segment that he does where he like takes one, he visits these small pizzerias across the country and he rates their pizza. He does like the one, I think it's called like the one bite challenge, and you might see his pizzas that are based off that at the grocery store. But anyway, so he said, okay, we do this stuff with pizzerias, so let's try to help out these really struggling businesses during the pandemic. And he did a lot of good. And I know that about him, and it's something he deserves a lot of credit for. So anyway, he's putting on this Pizza Fest thing that has a lot of sponsors. And he found out, he got word from some of these sponsors, that a Washington Post journalist was sniffing around, was emailing sponsors, and essentially asking them why they were going to affiliate themselves with this event and with Dave Portnoy. So what did Dave Portnoy do? Because he hadn't gotten a call from the Washington Post yet. They're apparently doing a story on him and his event, and no one from the Post had called him. They're emailing his sponsors. And so David Portnoy gets on the phone, calls this journalist with the Washington Post, tells her at the onset, hey, I'm recording you, and proceeds to have a conversation with her about what exactly she's trying to get to in this story and in this reporting. Here's part of that conversation.
We have this Pizza Fest happening on Saturday, and you're reaching out to our advertisers, and you're basically sending an email that says, to the effect, Dave's a misogynic racist, do you want to defend yourselves advertising at this event, right?
I'm sorry, what's your name, Dave? I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm the guy you're writing the article about, Dave Portnoy.
Oh, you're Dave Portnoy. Oh, hey, how are you?
Good.
Good. No, I'm not. I haven't said anything like that.
I can read if you want. If you want, I can read what you actually sent. I have it.
Yeah, read, because I sent a bunch of notes, so I want to make sure I know which one.
Okay. We are planning to write about the festival and how some of the sponsors and participants have drawn criticism by seemingly to associate themselves with Dave Portnoy, who has a history of misogynic comments and other problematic behavior. I want to make sure that Blank had a chance to respond to this, since the company is the most prominent of their partners of his festival.
Oh, that's the one I sent to, which was definitely the most pointed of them, because I really did want them to respond, and I was hoping to get something from them.
Do you think that's fair? Like, I totally disagree with the assertions of what you said, that misogynic and all that stuff. So, like, it kind of backs people into a corner. So I'm happy to go over anything. I mean, you have, that is pretty pointed. You said you didn't do it. Then I have the exact evidence of you doing it. So
no, I didn't say I didn't do that. I said I did. That was the one that was the most pointed.
Well, no, you that went before I provided proof, you said you didn't really remember doing that. And then I read it to you and you're like, oh yeah, I did it that one time. So
yeah, first of all, I don't know why he's saying misogynist like that, misogynic. So that was like something when I watched the initial video that I really had to get past in order to understand and appreciate what was going on. So just note it, he's going to continue to say it like that. Maybe that's some shtick of his. I don't know. They were calling him a misogynist. But anyway, you hear her at the beginning say, I haven't said anything like that. And then he reads her an email that she sent to one of the sponsors, which very clearly has a narrative, has a bias, where, and being someone who has sponsors, if someone reached out to one of my sponsors, a quote-unquote journalist for the Washington Post, and said, hey, you know, we wanted to ask you about why you're affiliating yourself with Brandi Cruz, who has a history of, you know, whatever, being a racist and a transphobe. So he's clearly calling them out on, you're approaching this story with a clear bias and trying to, what, scare my sponsors away? So here's more of this conversation.
To me, it's kind of like torturous interference. Like, we're doing an event. Everyone's happy about the event. I've raised $50 million for small business. I've helped pizza. None of that. It's Dave's misogynic and problematic, and I'm happy to talk about it. Because to me, nobody would like if someone's going around sending that email to their sponsors. And again, you're not, like, questioning. You're. It's almost like a statement of fact. This is what I am.
Yeah. So look, I just want you to know that this is not, I want to talk to you about this, but
should talk to me before sending that email?
What I wanted to do is I wanted to talk to you when we had, we were going to have some specific questions for you. And so I wanted to kind of have the full idea of what we
That's not a full idea. Like, anybody who's rationally reading that email being sent to an advertiser would have to be like, this is a hit piece and you have your mind made up. Why else would you you call me in the intro. I'll say it again. Dave Portnoy has a history of misogynic comments and other problematic behavior. You didn't say Dave Portnoy raised $50 million for small business. Dave Portnoy saved thousands of pizza places. You didn't mention, you said it in a way that is putting sponsors on the defensive.
And he makes such a good point. And this is done way too often in the media. The way he says you could have framed it, this email, I also don't think that that's a very journalistic way to frame it, to email them and say, hey, Dave Portnoy has done nothing but good stuff. He's raised all this money and saved all these businesses. You must be really proud to be a sponsor. That's just kind of a different page out of the same book. But you can see how both of those, you know, emails are rooted in bias. So instead of including anything positive that Dave Portnoy has done, she makes the statement. It's a statement. He's misogynistic. He's made problematic statements in the past. Clearly her opinion. A journalistic email, if she wants to do a story on this event, and I hate that I have to give journalistic advice to a journalist for the Washington Post, would be, hey, we're doing a story on this pizza fest that David Portnoy is hosting. Can you tell me why you decided to sponsor the event? Simple. Allow them to explain to you why you've decided to sponsor the event. And then if there's follow-up questions about, hey, can I ask you about these past comments he made, then fine. But what he's trying to illustrate here, and I think this next clip, the final clip I'm going to play from this, illustrates it very well, is that you have a media outlet that already knows the story they want to write, and they're going around trying to gather information that will prop up the narrative that they have already decided on. Let's play this last clip.
Have you made your mind up about me?
We're in the reporting phase. I don't, I can't, not for me to say, and I'm working with somebody else.
But that seems like a pretty straightforward question, that have you made your mind up about me? If you can't answer that, no.
I can say I have not made my mind up about you.
Then why would you include that in the email to sponsors?
Because I was hoping for a dialogue with them. You know, it's sometimes you have to say something like, this is like, it's sort of a reporting tactic. When you want someone to respond, you kind of have to indicate that there might be something negative, and then you get them to engage. That's all I was trying to do. I really wanted them to engage with me.
That is a sad state of journalism, if that's a tactic that you have to, what I would say is make up something about somebody.
That is not a journalistic tactic. It's not sort of a journalistic tactic. That's not true at all. That's not why she was sending emails that were worded that way. That's how she was trying to get out of whatever box she put herself into in a conversation with Dave Portnoy. But the idea that you can only, as a journalist, get someone to respond to your inquiries if you frame the story in a negative way and then they feel compelled to respond, that I've never even heard of that. That's not realistic. She clearly had her mind made up about Dave Portnoy, and then they were going to call him, maybe for comment, once that story was already written, and insert a couple lines from him into the story that they'd already crafted in their minds long before they started reaching out to sponsors and reaching out to Dave Portnoy. And I will tell you, this happens all the time. This happens much more than it ever should, and good for Dave Portnoy for calling it out. It is absolutely unbelievable. All right, coming up next, the mayor of Everett, I think, continues to surprise me in good ways when it comes to, I think, her realization that public safety really needs to be the number one priority for her community. We're going to get to that segment coming up next. But first, I have been preaching First Mark Insurance and the First Mark Challenge. Everybody needs insurance. So why would you not have your insurance handled by a local company with a track record of excellent public service? And why would you not see if they can't save you a little bit of money in the process of getting your insurance needs taken care of? Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge in the spring. Did it take a little investment of our time? Yeah, it was free, but we had to meet with them. We met with them virtually. We talked to them about our insurance needs. And one of the things that Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, told me is, yeah, you got to invest a little time up front. But then if you go with First Mark, we are handling this for you, if you want, for the rest of your life.
I've been doing this 35 years. And when I see things like the company that has a name your price tool, that scares the crap out of me, right? Because yeah. What are they going to name? I want cheap. Right. And I got insurance, and it's good, and it's all good until you need it. And then when you need it, it's really not worth anything. Right. So I just think this conversation, I don't care if it took 5 hours, it's worth it. And it's not a conversation you have to have ever again, because now for you and Mike, now that you're part of the First Mark family, right, we have a team that's going to be reviewing your account every year. And if we think there's a change that needs to be made, or we need to move to a different company, we're going to do all that work internally and get back out to you and say, hey, Brandy, we think we need to move you from company A to company B. And it's just going to be that. You don't have to spend that time ever again. It's just on the front end that you make that investment to make sure you've got the right coverage. And then from then, it's easy.
Yeah, it's easy. And you never pay First Mark Insurance anything. And so for me, I really think that any adult with a job and insurance needs really needs to move away from these major carriers. And these, like you said, the 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. Can I use that phrase? Is that copywritten? I don't know, but we better than on the show. Because it's just not, it's honestly, it might be convenient, but at what cost? So try the First Mark Challenge. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. You will find out that they work for you. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Look, I am very critical of elected leaders in our state on the issue of public safety. And I have said that I think having this one-party rule, having one party, in control of government in our major cities and certainly in Olympia, has had a negative impact on public safety. And I don't know that we've ever seen it worse than it is now. And some of these policies that have been pushed through, you know, 2020 conversations around police defunding that led a lot of officers to decide that they wanted to do something else or they wanted to do their jobs somewhere else. And I really feel like it's important to give credit where credit is due, and to acknowledge and recognize Democratic leaders in particular who have started to turn the tide on this particular issue and have started to really embrace a different way of thinking and public safety as a priority. And I have to say that one of them I've been really pleased with lately is Everett Mayor Cassie Franklin. Now, look, is Everett perfect right now? No, Everett has a lot of public safety challenges still. There are some particular areas of Everett where things are not great. And this is certainly not something that's going to be fixed overnight. But she has really started to message publicly that public safety has to take priority. And she came out and said that includes hiring more police officers at a time when, you know, saying that as a Democrat or as a progressive isn't something that is politically popular. I really get the sense that she has stopped caring what is politically popular, and she started caring more about what her city actually needs and what people need to feel safe. This is the headline from Fox 13. Everett Mayor's 2024 budget proposal includes hiring 9 more officers and a wellness coordinator. Here she is with Fox 13. They also spoke to the chief of police up there, Dan Templeman.
We actually have done a study of our police department that identified that we do need to hire more officers for a city of this size and certainly a city that's growing.
9 is a great start, but it's critically important that the community also partner with us. And that may mean nonprofits or other community organizations that have expertise in some of these areas that we're dealing with.
And that is also a really critical thing to recognize. You know, there are good public-private partnerships and there are bad ones. We've seen an example of a bad one, and that just happened. We talked about it on the show yesterday in the city of Seattle, where the King County Regional Homelessness Authority was put in charge of something called, I think it was it Project Zero? Am I getting that wrong? Can you look that up? I think I'm saying the wrong P word. Was put in charge of an initiative that they claimed Partnership Zero. The King County Regional Homelessness Authority was put in charge of something called Partnership Zero, and they claimed when it was first launched in February of 2022 that in a year's time it could result in basically zero homelessness in downtown Seattle. And they convinced the private sector to put in millions and millions of dollars into that initiative to give them millions and millions of dollars to get to this effective zero of homelessness in downtown Seattle. What happened? A year and a half later, it's folding. The program hasn't accomplished anything close to what it said it was going to accomplish, and now all that money has gone to waste. But what I'm hearing up in the city of Everett is they recognize that, hey, the government might not be the best solution for all of this stuff, that there are people in the private sector, in the nonprofit world, who might be able to do this stuff a lot better than we can, and we need to partner with them, we need to empower them, and help them do what they do best. You know, what comes to mind is Andrea Suarez and We Heart Seattle. The government in Seattle and King County has basically shunned Andrea Suarez, and here you have a woman who started this because she was sick of, you know, going into these parks and seeing how dirty it is, and she just started to clean them up. And then all these citizens started to help her. And now she is very effective with very little money at getting people into housing and at building relationships with individuals who are living on the streets and understanding what their needs are and what their barriers are. Yet you think the city of Seattle and King County really want to work with her in a meaningful way to leverage what she's doing to help improve the situation? No. But I get the sense in Everett that they are not only open to that, but they understand that that is really critical in order to get to the bottom of what's happening with substance abuse, with homelessness, with mental health issues. And that when you have a public-private partnership, it's not just the private sector giving the government more money that they're going to squander. So I really wanted to take an opportunity today to give some credit to Everett's mayor for, I think, increasingly so, setting the tone that if you don't feel safe in the community, then nothing else matters, and making that a priority. And I really hope that other mayors and leaders across Western Washington and across the state would follow her lead on that. It is never too late to change direction on this very critical issue. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, it is a very special day this Thursday. I've got my family just coming in from all over the country for my big day. And so my sister got in late last night. She was nice enough to stop by the studio for a special edition of Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, welcome.
Hi.
How was your trip from Florida?
It was good. It was a little long, but it's always a little long.
And then you're always a super wuss when you come to Washington because you got in here like, it's so cold. And then I noticed that you are wearing a sweater of mine that you left my house with this morning without asking.
Yes.
That's fine. So who has done more for my wedding? You or Nicole?
Nicole.
That's true.
Nicole, for sure. You know, I've always kind of gotten away with not doing a lot of heavy lifting for weddings, even with my friends from back home, because I live so far away that I just kind of get out of things. And I apologize, but I'm also kind of lucky.
Miranda's been, without throwing any family members under the bus, she's like my family member whisperer.
Yes.
Which is really funny because you used to not be the family member whisperer. No. And now you very much are. And so if I have any fears or concerns about particular family members and what they may or may not do, I send Miranda to tell them in a nice way not to.
Yes. Through all my years of market research within the family and healing and just learning how to deal with myself, I have learned a lot about the family. So now I'm really good about navigating the family scape.
Yeah, I'm not, because I come across as like a little sanctimonious and condescending because of the way I describe things in a very business, straightforward manner.
Yeah.
And it's just not the right temperament.
No, you don't. You gotta have a good delivery when you're telling people that they either, you know, might talk too much or et cetera.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's fit in a couple Florida stories, even though you're not in Florida anymore.
No.
Let's follow up on a story we talked about last week. There was all this hoopla in the national media about how Florida is just a sanctuary for white supremacists, and there was arrests of two people who hung up swastikas on a bridge. Turns out, not Floridians.
They're not Floridians. So you guys just be bringing your hatred to our state for some reason. But they were Texans that got arrested for the hanging up the swastikas. So we had to clear the air to make sure people didn't think those were Floridians.
I really wish they had been like Californians.
Oh, yeah, that would have been too good.
That would have been too good. Yeah, you can't get away with that. Or like Washingtonians from Seattle.
Yeah, well, not good. I mean, nobody wants anybody that has crazy, hateful opinions like that. But it is nice to know that they're not from our state. When our state gets so much hate in the media, it's nice to be able to kind of clear the air and just be like, these are not Florida problems. These are other people bringing their problems to Florida.
Yeah, what else you got today? I forgot the other story.
Talked a little bit about how there's the first private funded speed train, like rail, that's going to be connecting Miami to Orlando. So you'll be able to get to Orlando in like 90 minutes or less, which is pretty.
How long would it usually take?
Like four and a half hour drive.
So I've been on a bullet train in Kyoto, so in Japan, which they're apparently like way ahead of. It's weird because you're on this train that's going so fast and all you see are these like impoverished little villages along the way, and I'm like, hi.
It's like, hi, it's fast. Yeah.
But the reason I love this story for today is I guarantee that that privately funded railway will be the cleanest bit of public transportation, will be the safest bit of public transportation, won't go over budget, will be done on time.
It's true.
Because the government can't manage anything.
It's true. And also, I feel like the government is kind of like, they're like, oh, well, if we're doing it, like, people just have to be used to whatever we bring to the table. And like, if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. And they're not going to do anything to make it better for you.
Yeah.
But the only issue we have had, because we do have a Brightline in Miami, which is a kind of a mini bullet train for commuters, we have some safety issues with that, but it's always people who just drive around the train arms and then get hit by the train. So it's never the train. And people always try to say the train's unsafe, but it's not the train. It's everybody that just doesn't know how to operate around trains.
Yeah, if you drive around the arm, that's not the train.
No, but they always blame it on the train, and it drives people crazy.
Yeah, no, we've had all these issues here with our public transportation being absolutely contaminated with meth and fentanyl, which the government's trying to convince people is not a big deal. Totally safe to ride. Yeah, that's believable. And then they don't crack down on people who don't pay. And so it becomes this, like,
de facto homeless and drug den, and it's unsafe, and there's all these issues. That wouldn't be, that would never be allowed in a privately run, privately operated anything.
No, definitely not. And also, you know, Miami does have a free commuter transport in downtown, like to get from like all around downtown Miami and Brickell. It doesn't cost any money. You can get on it. And we do get some homeless people on there, but I have never once seen anybody use drugs on that. So that might be a very specific to Seattle and Washington.
Well, it's because there are consequences in Florida.
There are consequences.
For open-air drug use. I mean, Seattle just passed this like watered-down quasi-ordinance to criminalize drug possession and drug use. And they made it so difficult to enforce, it's not going to be enforced.
Yeah.
So when you say there's no consequences for doing this, if I'm a drug addict, then of course I'm going to do that. Of course I'm going to just hop on the train and ride around. And I mean, I don't understand why that like isn't sinking in for them.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay. Well, when is that going to be done?
I think it said 2026. Okay. So we got a few years, and I'm sure they have a lot to like deal with. But Florida, I think, is ideal for stuff like that because there's no mountains to blow apart to try to get, you know, make way for the train. It's just a straight flat shot. So it should be a pretty easy build for them.
You just got to blow apart alligators.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Alligator in the way, blow it up.
Blow it up.
I saw there was like a beach close because a 9-foot alligator. Is that a big alligator?
It was a crocodile, which is even worse because the crocodiles are a little bit more aggressive and they go in the salt water. So they can definitely ruin your vacation.
All right. Let's end with one issue. My wedding's in 2 days. What's the situation with your nails right now?
We
had this conversation.
I did these specifically to fearmonger my sister to think that this were my nails for the wedding.
They look like you're gonna, I don't know, extract blood from someone.
Maybe
those.
I did.
When are those coming off?
These are coming off in 2 days. Also, okay. Come off right before the wedding, and then I'll put on good nails for you.
Bridezilla. Okay. Oh. All right. I know you're running around doing errands for me after this. So love you. Thank you for being here.
Love
and even if you wore those nails, I'd still be happy to have you be part of my wedding.
You guys heard it. So if you see me in the wedding photos, Brandy gave permission.
Yeah, we have to Photoshop those out. All right. Thank you, sister dear.
Love you.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Just a little practice dancing, you know, we got to get it in. I love how people in the live chat noticed her nails before I even asked her about her nails. They're like, Miranda still has her freaking Edward Scissorhands nails on. She
they're
promises
not black,
they're coming
though.
Off. They're not black. Red's
black.
Not much no better. All right, you know what else? Good transition into my Eastside Weight Loss Clinic ad. The very first thing my sister told me when she saw me this morning, because she got into our house super late and I was already in bed, she said, "You look so skinny." I was like, that's what every bride wants to hear before her wedding day. Because I am down, I've got to reweigh myself, probably 38 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan at this point. And I am just so grateful that I really prioritized myself and my health and my happiness last year so that I could feel this way before my wedding day. So if you have something big coming up, maybe you want to get back into your pre-pandemic shape before the holidays this year, or you just want to do it because you know that you don't feel and you're not looking your best. Check out Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, and start by just doing a free 15-minute consultation. You can do it virtually with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. And by the way, you can do the program from anywhere. You can do every single aspect of it virtually. You get a handy app, helps you through it. And they can answer any questions you might have about the program and whether it's right for you. I like the program because to me, it's easy to follow. I need structure. If I could have lost weight on my own, I would have done it. Nope, I needed someone to tell me what to eat, how much of it to eat, and to help me come up with a strategy to be able to keep it off for life without feeling like I'm on a lifelong diet. Because Lord knows I've been on way too many diets in my life, way too many crash courses, and I'm done with it. Feeling great before my wedding. Alrighty. Okay, on the Thursday show, we've added a new segment that I'm hoping will turn us all into financial whizzes. Whizzes sounds like whizzing. Anyway, we're super lowbrow on the show today. And so every Thursday on the show, we are going to have our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on to talk about what's happening in the news, what's happening with the economy, and what other sort of crazy stuff that we want to bring up with him. I wanted to talk to him today about Bidenomics. Oh man, am I sick of hearing the phrase Bidenomics in the White House press briefings. Like, I'm over it. And there have been, I will say, to give the press and opinion writers nationally a little bit of credit, there have been a lot of negative headlines about Bidenomics. Reason writes, Bidenomics is failing everyday Americans. Other headlines, latest inflation data shows Americans are still not buying Bidenomics. Are ordinary Americans buying Bidenomics? I would say for a lot of ordinary Americans who are really struggling still under the weight of inflation, they're not. And so I wanted to ask Zach Abraham, who is a financial whiz, about what exactly, whiz, there it is again. I'll come up with a different word, about his take on some of these headlines about Bidenomics and about what you need to be prepared for. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, always good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so here's the headline from Newsweek that was just out. It says, the results are in. Bidenomics is a complete failure. What say you?
Every time the term gets used, there's a part of me that dies and there's a part of me that dies laughing because it's, oh, it works. And you're sitting there going, well, you printed $7 trillion and threw it around the economy. Like, you know, pardon the term, but like a rapper at a strip club. You know what I mean? You're just throwing money everywhere and you're like, oh, yeah, look at the growth. And you're going, well, yeah, it's going to make things look good for a second. The analogy we use here in the office is, you know, you could have a person on their deathbed and you pump them full of enough amphetamine. Yeah, they're going to perk up for a little bit. Right. But then you're sitting there going, OK, well, as soon as this wears off, you're back to, you know, being flat on your back. And the whole we're going to dump $7 trillion into the economy and it's going to give us a short-term boost. Yeah, that's some brilliant economic thinking, right? What happens when the $7 trillion's gone, right? That's the question. And I think it's not really much of a question. I think the reality of that is knocking on the door right now.
Well, the question is how long, though, because we have an election year coming up. Oftentimes, if there is something happening in the economy that Americans aren't going to be happy about, there are these efforts, often artificially, to try to make people feel good just long enough to get their ballots in. So, I mean, how long do you see before that comes crashing down?
I really have a hard time seeing things remain in the sort of they're decelerating really quick right now, Brandy. The problem is that economic numbers by definition are backward looking. So for instance, the best analogy I can give you, especially in the setup that we've been through over the last 3 years, so I have a guy's redoing my backyard right now. We scheduled it a year and a half ago. Okay, so a lot of big money purchases or a lot of the biggest inputs into GDP calculations are things that occurred a year and a half to 2 years ago and are just being realized, right? If you went under contract to have a home built a year and a half ago, you know, you make the final payment for that house a month from now, 2 months, that goes into this year's GDP, but it's not reflective of this year's growth, right? It's a purchase that happened 2 years ago. And so, you know, we were just reading, everybody's like, oh, everything looks great. And we read in our daily podcast thing that we put out minutes from the Fed at the end of 2007 saying they expected 2.75% growth in 2008. Well, we all know what happened, right? So this happens at the end of every cycle. Everybody thinks it's going to go on forever and bad things can't happen. And then reality sets in. And I think you're in the process of that happening now. The unemployment rate jumped from 3.5 to 3.8 over the last 3 months. It's not a huge move, but I think by the end to middle of end of second quarter of next year, I think you should probably be, I will be surprised if it is not broadly recognized that we're in recession.
So is there anything that you think that the Biden administration, you could see them doing to try to avoid that broad recognition in the middle of an important election year?
The only thing, I think they've really pushed the only lever that they really can, meaning we know the constitutional and legal issues they've got with paying off student loans. I won't be surprised if they make more overtures to that. I will not be surprised if you see them trying to burn down more of the SPR, because that's another thing that's happening right now. You don't hear a lot of people talking about it. You've got the dollar index back above 105, which anytime you get above 105, it's like putting the brakes on the global economy. At the same time, you have oil topping over 90 again, and you still have CPI running at 4.5 to 5. So every tick you see the dollar index go up, that is less stuff that we will sell internationally. And every tick dollar you see oil go up is less stuff that you'll see bought here domestically. So I don't really think, I don't think there's much they can do. I'm sure they're going to try to put lipstick on the pig, but you know, unless they want to throw another, they need another inflation prevention act, right? We gotta spend more money to buy down inflation. But outside of that, outside of more money giveaways or promises to give money away, which I would assume they're going to try to do, I don't think there's any way around it.
Yeah, even Biden said he wishes that they had named the their Inflation Reduction Act something else, because he's like, well, technically that's not what it does. I'm like, you think?
Yeah, we're going to spend $1 trillion to bring inflation down. That makes, well, you know what? Honestly, though, that's perfect Joe Biden, isn't it? Like, here's how I'm going to tackle inflation. We're going to print another $1 trillion and spend it. I think that makes about as much sense as the rest of his domestic policy. So, you know, par for the course, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, how about next time we have you back on, maybe next month, we'll try to segue that into, I don't know if it's good news, but try to give people the tools they need to weather whatever storm is coming, okay?
Yeah, and I think it definitely calls for that. So let's do that.
All right, Zach Abraham, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you so much, Brandy.
And if you don't want to wait until next month to find out how you can survive Bidenomics, Zach is doing a free live webinar this next Thursday, so September 28th, starting at 3 p.m. It's free to sign up. Just go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. You can get advice, hear about their investment strategy, and hear how they can try to help you weather that unpredictable economy that we are unfortunately venturing into more and more by the day. All right, let's get to questions and comments from the live stream. I'm going to save wedding questions and comments and advice for Sanity Check today, but a couple super chats. Matt Gilbert says, the sailors say, Brandy, you're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be. Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea. Is that good? Wow. Basically.
Wow.
I'm Adele.
Look at you.
I'm essentially Adele. Bill Biz with a $50 super chat today. Brandy, congratulations to you and Mike on your wedding day. Thank you so much. You know what? I'm going to use that $50 and we're going to buy a bottle of champagne and I'm going to ask for a massage. Too much? TMI on the show today? All right. On what's happening in the city of Yakima with the Matt Yakima Mayor Nicole's like, let's just get through this without being canceled. Bunky says she claims she's nonpartisan. A lot of mayoral positions, city council positions are technically nonpartisan, meaning a little letter doesn't pop up next to your name on the ballot. But that doesn't mean that someone's not a Democrat or not a Republican. It's just you can't run for them with a political party affiliation. All right. Country Guy says that darn Bill of Rights thing keeps getting in the way of progressive policies. It was written so long ago. Does it still apply even if you don't like those right wingers? All right. Diana Manning says, I noticed the sign at the petitioner's table said conservatives. So someone assumed without actually talking to the petitioner about the initiatives themselves. I don't think anyone was harassing anyone. And yeah, I don't know. It was a weird sign he had. And some of those signature gatherers are paid. Some of them are volunteers. I don't know about this particular one, but I don't think it's a great idea to put conservatives, you know, do all this, because to me, it's not a conservative thing to want, you know, gas prices not to be so high, to want police to be able to pursue dangerous criminals. That's not conservative. That's just common sense. So he should have said common sense instead of conservative. All right. On the city of Burien and one council member calling it white supremacy to want to clear these homeless encampments from public spaces, Rick Johnson says, stop playing the race card. It becomes like crying wolf when it comes to actual racism. So many woke whites crying racism and bigotry is incredibly patronizing and insulting to those groups who are fully capable of speaking for themselves. People are people. Yeah, and I don't think this particular council member was a white guy. But still, I agree with your sentiment that when you call everything racist, soon that word just goes in one ear and out the other. It's like when you compare people to Nazis. It's like, okay, you know, let's save that comparison for, unfortunately, in our lifetimes, if there ever is someone who is comparable to Hitler and the Nazis. All right, Tegan Levine, hello, my friend, says it's easier for some people to blame someone instead of working on a solution. I could not agree more. On the David Portnoy call with the Washington Post, where he exposed them, and by the way, after that call, and he made it public, he said he had the scheduled time to talk to the Washington Post, and the Post canceled. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Because they were caught red-handed. Andy Stevens says, I do not understand why Bezos doesn't do a clean sweep of the Washington Post and start over. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, I bet the way he stated misogyny also confused the journals. I was surprised she never was like, what are you trying to say? Misogyny? Misogyne? Misogynic?
Misogynic.
Oh, yeah. Something Liz like that. Said there's a real lack of integrity and accountability in general these days. Yeah, one of the worst things you can do as a true journalist is to approach a story already believing or knowing how that story is going to turn out, because that's not journalism. Matthew Cook said, good for the sponsor alerting Portnoy. They smelled the BS from a mile away. Yeah, that's when you want those diehard, loyal sponsors who know who you are, know what you're about, and they're not going to blow in the breeze if someone sends them a scary email. Todd Welch says, why does the Washington Post want to do a negative post on a fundraiser? I agree. It's so strange. And you should give David Portnoy credit for doing what the government couldn't do and trying to keep small businesses open. All right, Bucky says, so many once great news organizations have fallen so far. And journalists like that, I say it very loosely, they give good journalists a bad name. Not every journalist operates like that. Not every journalist makes up their mind about people without speaking to them first. And so, you know, I think good journalists who are working hard, who are doing difficult work in a difficult environment, they should be just as mad as Dave Portnoy is about the way that that story was approached. All right, shall we get to some wedding advice to keep me sane over the next 2 days? Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. I thought it would be good given how high adrenaline I've been. I've been in a pretty good mood this week, just getting stuff done. However, that could change on a dime. Warning, Nicole.
I know.
Oh, I know.
This morning was a little, you were a little testy.
That's sometimes right. You use too many words to say things. Where I was like, just use fewer words. Mm-hmm, I don't have any time, but I was a little testy this morning. But I'm good now.
Just short. I would call it short.
Tell me what I need to know and nothing that I don't need to know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I love you.
I know.
I love you. However, this will be good. Keeping me sane on my wedding day is a really good way to end with our sanity check.
Let's see.
So some of these were messaged on Patreon. TC said, wedding advice. Plan a couple of days of downtime after where you have nowhere to be and food readily available. You will be so exhausted after the wedding. Coming down off the stress and excitement is like a terrible hangover. No alcohol even needed. Also remember, if things go wrong, nobody knows what should have been except you. Don't let the little stuff get to you. Nobody will know the difference, so it's not worth it to stress. Congratulations on your wedding. My husband and I also got married on the 23rd. Great choice. Oh, great. Okay, we're going to share a wedding anniversary then.
And you did that. We're not doing a show next week because you needed a few days to chill after the wedding.
And I got, when she says have plenty of food on hand, Suzanne Monson stopped by the studio yesterday and got us this beautiful, like, food basket.
Aww.
And it has great, it also had, there was also some massage oil in it and a candle.
Awkward.
That's fine. But it has like a bunch of snacks and goodies. So we're going to take it with us because we're staying at a spa. So we're going to take it with us for the few days that we're going to stay there. So Suzanne got the food covered for us. We appreciate it. All right. Amy said, wedding advice, keep a sense of humor. In addition to wonderful times and much happiness, there will be hard and sad times, but a sense of humor can really help. Wedding day advice, be sure you enjoy it, all the many months of planning, and then in a day, it's all over in a flash. Yes, I'm going to try my best to absolutely enjoy it. Leah said, hi, Brandy. My wedding marriage advice is to continue to learn about yourself. Share yourself as honestly as you can with your husband, and hopefully he will do the same. Communication is key. Next, humor. We need to be able to laugh through life together. I married when I was 21. She later clarified. She said 22, and then she's like, oh, actually, I was 21. Mm-hmm. And we are going on almost 22 years of marriage. We are not the exact same people we were, but grew together to become the people we are today. Take care and have fun. Yeah. Life is a gift. That is so nice. And you guys are a gift. And all That's the advice sweet. That you've given me, I promise I will take it to heart. I will keep my sanity. I'll be nice to Nicole, because she's done more for my wedding than almost anyone except my wedding planner. So again, we are not going to be here next week. And you're actually Nicole is having more of a vacation next week than I am.
If you weren't going to jump on a plane, I was.
Yeah, where are you going?
Cabo.
Nice life, Nicole. You deserve it. You've been working super hard this entire last month as my friend, on the wedding, on the show, mailing merch. Doing all sorts of things. You deserve.
I'm so excited for you. I feel like, I can't believe it's here, actually.
It's so exciting.
We've been talking about it first. It was like yesterday that you were like, when am I getting a ring?
I was like, I might have to cut this one loose. I'm just kidding.
And during COVID, when I had that dream, I woke up because you had told me what kind of ring you wanted.
Yeah.
And so I woke up after having a nightmare that Mike bought you a terrible ring and I hadn't told him what kind of ring you wanted. And so I've been dreaming about this for you for
a few
years.
Seems like forever ago. So we're not going to have live shows next week. However, we would never miss an episode of Sundays with Subscribers. Absolutely not. So we have two ready to go for you that are going to be great. We're going to have an in-depth conversation on the show this Sunday about a topic we've covered quite a bit in the last 2 weeks, which is the squandering of taxpayer dollars on the homeless industrial complex. And then next week, we're going to have journalist and activist Glenn Morgan, who exposes better than anyone things that the government wants to hide. So if you have not signed up to become a subscriber, now is a good time to do it, because we won't have free live shows next week, just the Sundays with Subscribers episodes. So you can sign up undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month, and I think it's worth it. So thank you all for your kind wishes for the wedding. I will make sure to share photos with you when I get back. See you then.